You're listening to Holocaust survivor Mel Fetterbusch, interviewed by his son on the occasion of his 90th birthday. Mr. Fetterbusch spent much of his adult life not speaking about his horrific experiences in order to safeguard the feelings of his family. Today, after having 5 grandchildren, he has agreed to reveal the details they've never heard. On this broadcast, Mr. Fetterbusch discusses the concentration camps and death camps at Buchenwald, Triglitz, and Theresienstadt. He reveals details about living in the Polish ghettos and working as a slave laborer for the Nazis. He shares his harrowing experience of being falsely arrested and placed in solitary confinement, and his personal account of the murder of his parents and 9-year-old twin sisters, plus his heroic attempt to save his own life by leaping from a Nazi cattle car headed for the infamous death camp, Auschwitz. If you have a question for Melvin Fetterbusch, call us now at 661-349-TALK, 661-349-8255. Or you can participate by joining the conversation in the chat room. Visit talkradiox.com/chat. You may also email your questions to melsurvived@aol.com at any time during the broadcast. To learn more, Mr. Fetterbusch's testimony and original Buchenwald passport can be viewed at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York. His eyewitness accounts can be accessed in the Fortunoff Archives at Yale University and at the Shoah Visual History Foundation, founded by Steven Spielberg. He's a speaker with the Holocaust and Human Rights Education Center in Purchase, New York, where he visits high school students, bringing his message of perpetual hope, global peace, and the end of prejudice. He's an adamant proponent of patriotism for the United States of America and support for her ally in freedom, liberty, and democracy, the State of Israel. This unprecedented live global broadcast is brought to you by TalkRadioX.com. And now, here's your host, Greg Fetterbusch.
Welcome. It's the ultimate Mel Fetterbusch interview, going on hour 3 now, day 2. And, Dad, you wanted to say something about why you wanted to do this interview.
Yes, I just want to make people understand the reason why I'm doing the interview. Every survivor is concerned about the deniers. So I just want to mention what happened in Buchenwald, the day when Buchenwald was liberated, and
when was
General
that?
Eisenhower.
What was the date?
That was April 11, 1944. No, I'm sorry, April 11, 1945.
Right.
And General Eisenhower, this is what happened. It is a matter of history that when the supreme commander of the Allied forces, General Dwight Eisenhower, found the victims of the concentration camp Buchenwald, he ordered all possible photographs to be taken. And for the German people from surrounding villages to be ushered through the camps and even made them bury the dead. He did this because he said in words to this effect, get it all on record now. Get the films, get the witnesses, because somewhere down the road of history, some bastard will get up and say that this never happened. Now more than ever, with Iran, among others, claiming the Holocaust to be a myth, it is imperative to make sure that the world never forgets. I also want to mention that I speak to honor the memory of those whose voices were silenced and to ensure that the next generation will feel compelled to work towards preventing future genocides. That's all I want to say at this moment.
There's video. I remember seeing a lot of video and film photographs of when Eisenhower arrived at Buchenwald.
Right.
Was that the day did he show up the day of liberation or a couple of days after?
Frankly speaking, I think it was the day of liberation.
Okay, so, and you were already gone from there at that point.
Yes.
You weren't there at all at that point.
No, I was not there, but that I had escaped, and I came to Buchenwald about a few weeks after the liberation.
So when you, all right, I will get back to that later, but when you did, when you got, I have to ask now, when you got to Buchenwald, there were still people there? There were still prisoners there? Had everyone left?
No, everybody was still there. This is part of my story. There was no, for Jews, there was no place to go. The Polish people did not, we had no one waiting for us to receive us with open arms. Our neighbors didn't want us. In fact, they killed some of them, some of us who returned, because didn't want the Jews to claim their properties.
Right,
and that was the case.
Okay, so let's continue kind of where we left off. On the last show. And we talked about your home. We talked about, now, what about your home? I think I may have asked you this, but I don't know if you answered me. Was your home at all meaningful to you in any way? Or what kind of memories do you have of it, of you having a meaningful relationship with your family or your brothers and sisters, your parents in your home?
I loved my family, of course. It was a family, you know. We loved each other.
Do you remember when your sisters were born?
Absolutely. Yes, I remember that very well, yes.
Do you remember when your mom was pregnant with them?
Yes, I do.
What do you remember about that?
I remember when she was pregnant with them. I remember when she was due to give birth an aunt of mine, who was the youngest sister of my mother, came. And they lived in a different town, in a different shtetl.
What was the town?
And it was quite a. The name of the town was Turobin.
Uh huh.
And it was quite a trip, because it was a whole day, a 24-hour trip. You can only go by train for part of the trip, and the rest of it you had to hire a horse and wagon to go, and it took overnight to get there. I did that trip myself from my hometown to the next by train to the large town on the way to Robin was Lublin. The name of that town is Lublin, a very well-known town.
That's where you would switch, off the train?
That's where I went to by train. And from there, I picked up a farmer. They usually came on Wednesdays to the market to sell their produce, and then at night they went back, and we paid them to take us to that village called Turobin. And so it's an overnight trip, and I remember being very, very cold and so on, but it was some trip.
Now, whose house was that you went to?
I stayed with my grandmother.
So your grandmother lived in Turobin. Was it called Turobin or Torbin?
Turobin in Yiddish, Turobin is the way it was.
So if you look at it on a map now, you would see Turobin, yes?
Turobin, yes. T-U-R-O-B-I-N.
Yeah. And so your mother's mother?
Was living there.
And your mother's father?
No. He was dead, because I was named after him.
How did he die?
He died apparently of a heart attack. Because he died, he just dropped dead. Apparently, it was a heart attack, even though we assume it was. Because how else was he? He was quite young when he died.
So when you were born, your grandmother was a widow.
Right.
And she had, who was living with her at the time?
No, she was actually... the younger sister of my mother, her name was Rachel. She was living with her.
So your mother's name was?
My mother's name was Feige.
Feige. Her maiden name was Feldman.
Right.
And then she married
your father, Godel.
And she became a Fetterbush.
Right.
And did she keep the name Fetterbush after he passed away?
No. Greg, even my grandfather passed away.
I'm sorry. I got it. So your grandmother had how many children?
My grandmother had 4 daughters and 1 son.
Okay, so, and the Faga, your her, one of the daughters was your mother.
Right.
And the names, do you remember the names of the other sisters and the brother?
Yes. Their brother's name was Shlomo. He was born before the last sister, Rachel. Rachel was the last, the youngest one. Shlomo was just before her. Then it was Gucha, a little older, and then it was Pearl, and then was my mother, Feiga, and then was Leah, and these are the older children.
And their name, Shlomo, was Fetterbush.
Shlomo is the one who went to Argentina.
So when you were growing up, were you close with any of those families?
Oh, very close. I loved them.
And that you would, that's why you would go to Torbin to visit them?
Yes.
And did they come to visit you?
No.
They never came to Demblin?
No, except for my aunt, the one, the youngest one. She came when my mother gave birth to the twins.
Rachel.
Right. And I loved her.
You were close with Rachel?
Oh, with all of them. I mean, I loved her because she was... I saw her more often than the others. She came a couple of times, in fact, to visit.
And she took that same trip by herself in the horse and wagon and on the train?
Oh, yes.
And how old was she around at that time? Would you be able to...
She was still single, so she couldn't be old. She must have been 20, maybe.
Uh-huh. And you were how old?
At that time, I must have been over in the... When my sisters were born in 1930, I was 7 years old because I was born in 1923.
So she came for the birth?
Right.
And do you remember how long she stayed?
She stayed for quite some time. I don't know exactly how long.
Were you still living in that first house that you were talking about?
The first apartment, yes.
Yes. So, oh, right. You said that the twins were born and then you moved into the next place.
Exactly.
And the twins were named...
Tobala, Shindala, like, and my aunt Tina is named after them.
Right.
And her name is Tina Suzanne.
Right. And do you remember them as babies?
Of course.
How old?
They were 9 years old when they were killed by the Germans. I was 16 years old at that time.
So you guys were pretty far apart in age. Did you ever play with them? Did you?
Oh yes, I loved them.
How did you? What do you remember about that?
How I remember? Oh yes.
No. What do you remember?
I remember everything. I mean, yeah, my sisters. I remember they went to school. They went to. Second or third grade, we started public school in Poland at the age of 7, and they were 9, so they must have been at the second or third grade.
That would, it figures a Polish school would start at second grade, right?
No, 7.
Okay. The age of 7.
I know, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
There's nothing else to say about them. So I know, I remember them very, very well.
Do you remember what they were like, what they looked like?
Oh, exactly.
Tell me.
I see them in front of me.
Tell me what they looked like.
Well, one, Shindala, the older one, who was older by a half an hour, she was blonde and blue-eyed and nicely built, skinny and so. And Tobala, the younger one, it was brunette. Brown eyes, and there was quite a difference between the looks of them, but they were both very, very beautiful.
So, and do you remember anything about their behavior, their personalities, any stories about what they did? Did they get in trouble?
No, they never got into trouble.
Nobody got hurt? You don't remember anything?
No. We were all three of us. They had three brothers. I was the oldest.
Right.
And we, all of us, protected them and loved them.
So your two other brothers, at the time that they were, how far apart were you in age?
Heinach, I was 7 years older.
I know, but I'm talking about your brothers.
My brothers were approximately a year and a half difference between the three of us.
Oh, so Heinach was a year and a half younger than you.
Yeah, and Sidney was a year and a half younger than Heinach.
Right, and Sidney, thank God, is still alive. And as we said before, he's the only one that survived. And interestingly enough, his daughter Felicia, who called in, had twins who were also one blonde and one brunette.
Uh huh.
Right?
Yes.
Stephanie and Danielle.
Right.
Who are now in their 20s.
Right.
Okay, so anything else about your sisters that you could tell me? You never mentioned anything about them to me.
They were very playful. We had a lot of fun with them.
Did they have their own room in the new house?
No, Greg. In the new house, we lived in two large rooms. One room in the back room was the one that we lived in, and the front room was the factory where my father made furniture. In the summertime, he was using the outside also when it was warm. In the winter, it was all done indoors. The place where my father worked was at night. We became a bedroom. We put up mattresses, which were made out of a sack and straw was a mattress. And we put them up on the benches, on the woodworking benches, and we slept on it.
So that was you and your brothers, or where did your parents sleep?
Me and my brothers. I was the one usually to clean up the place and put everything into order and make sure that that the mattresses are in place, that we all ready to go to sleep.
So what happened to all the wood and the furniture that was in that room?
Well, I made sure that everything sort of is in order and made room for that.
And your parents slept in the room with your sisters?
Right. Uh-huh. There were two beds. My father slept in one bed and my mother slept with my little sisters.
Oh, I see. And when you say he worked outside, did he work in the front or in the back?
In the front.
And did people come? Was it like a retail establishment? Did customers come?
Yes. He usually talked to customers right in the place, yes.
And who did he sell to mostly? Was it just regular people?
Or? A lot of regular people, anybody, but mostly officers, mostly military people.
So he was building furniture for the military base at the airport?
Yes, it's all was done to order. The furniture that he made today, you can only see it in an antique shop. Beautifully done. Very, very skilled. Needed a lot of skill to do what he did.
Did he provide furniture for some of the wealthier families?
There were very few wealthy families. But whoever wanted to buy something, yes, he did that.
So, and by this time, was he making a better living than when he was in the other shop?
No. The last standard of living, especially for the Jews, was low, and the Jewish people had to work very, very hard because the income was low. People did not have money the same way as I know it over here in the United States. They lived, by our standards, they would be all poor. Even the rich one would be poor.
So who were the people that worked for him?
People who from the same town who learned the trade and worked. So the younger guys, some people that I know, worked for him.
Okay, Stephanie has a question in the chat room. We're live on Talk Radio X. Please give us a call if you'd like to ask a question. You know what? Let me just check and see if we're getting any calls here, too. The number is 661-349-TALK, 661-349-8255, or you can go to the chat room, talkradiox.com/chat and ask a question there, or email it to melsurvived@aol.com. Who's the question from?
I have a question from Anne from Michigan.
Hi, Anne.
And she would like to know, when Melvin was speaking about his siblings, she would like to know, were all the kids separated when they were in the camps, or were they all together?
That's a good question.
That depends. I was in several camps. The first camp, we lived all together. In fact, the small children were there illegally. They were always hidden. When there was an inspection by the German or by the Gestapo, these kids, even 2 years old, knew that they had to keep quiet, very quiet. So we had a number of small children who were there illegally.
What do you mean by illegally?
Illegally means that the Germans did not know that they're there.
They were
not supposed to be there.
She would like to know about your family, I believe.
Well, my family.
Your siblings. What
my
happened?
My siblings were killed, right? 10 days after the war broke out, they were not in any camps.
Well, your brothers, though. The two twins were killed, and your parents. And then your two brothers, what happened with them?
What happened with them? They were with me, and we were in the same camp in Demblin. This was a working camp. And then when we went to another camp, we were separated. I was working in a woodworking shop, and they were working outside doing work with shovels, you know, like doing work, digging things and loading or unloading, very difficult work.
So they were in the same camp?
But
and we you
were in the same camp.
Mm-hmm.
And at the day when they were to work, they went to a different place to work than I.
Oh, got it. Were you two brothers working in the same place?
Yes.
Okay. And then
maybe not exactly in the same place, but they were out there in the same way, mm-hmm. same area.
Okay. I don't know if this is right now. I remember you telling a story about what happened to your brother when you were liberated. Your one brother that passed away the day after liberation?
Well, the one who did not survive.
Right.
The one who did not survive. This is the one you were talking about.
Yes.
His name was Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And he was beaten about 8 days before the liberation. And after this, he was lying on the bunk. And he died 2 days after the liberation. Mm. And he was beaten because he was caught trying to break in to steal ammunition for the underground.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We'll get into the specific details about that as well. So did I ask you yesterday about chores? Did you have chores when you were a kid? Did you work for your father?
No, I didn't work for my father. No. My father was, as I said, in the woodworking business, and he in the woodworking business was in my family going back for generations. And so I said, no, I don't want to be the same. I want to be something different. So after I finished our public school finished when I was 13 years old. And at that point, I went to learn to be a tailor and specializing in military uniforms.
All right. So when you were in school.
What grade is 13? Is that eighth grade, ninth grade?
I would say that our education when it's finished was equal to junior high at least.
So you learned in school, you spoke Polish, correct?
Yes, of course.
And at home, you spoke Yiddish with your family?
Yes.
And did you know any other languages at that age?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, Hebrew. I learned Hebrew.
You learned Hebrew in school?
School, I was sent to a special, to a private, for private lessons to learn Hebrew.
So what age did you start that?
Well, there are two kinds of Hebrew. the one Hebrew is when I started at the age of three was to learn how to pray. The thing that is the five books of Moses. This is, you know, the Bible. This is what I learned as a kid. And while I was going to school, I still went to this cheder, which is the Hebrew. And then I was sent to a teacher who taught the Hebrew language, to speak Hebrew, just like they do it now in Israel.
So the cheder that you went to,
right,
to learn the Bible,
right?
Who ran that? What was that associated with that big temple you were talking about?
No, not at all. These were individuals who are, we call them rabbis, and they taught the five books of Moses.
Do you remember the names of the rabbis?
Yes, but I don't think it's relevant. Of course I do.
But you can't remember right now.
Not right now, no.
If it comes to you, please tell me.
Okay.
Where was this place that you would go? In the shtiebel, in somebody's house?
In somebody's house, yes. In the rabbi's house.
And do you remember why you went or how you felt about going? Did your parents make you go?
Oh, yes. I was made to go, yes.
And did you go by yourself?
Yeah, we walked there, not far. It was all, it's a small place. The whole town was small, was within walking distance.
So when you were 3 years old, did your mother walk you there?
Maybe, yeah, probably.
Do you remember anything else about it?
Well, I remember one day I didn't want to go, and they came to pick me up. and I had a dog, and my dog attacked them.
Who was it that came?
Huh?
Who came? The rabbi?
No, he sent some kids.
Uh-huh.
The bigger kids to pick me up.
Oh, there were other kids in the class.
Same class, yes.
Uh-huh. And they came, and your dog, what was the dog's name?
Laika.
Right. What kind of a dog was it? It was a mix, wasn't it?
A mix, but I don't know exactly what it was white with a big black patch over his one eye.
How did you get this dog? Do you remember?
I don't remember that, no.
So they came and got you and you were upset?
Well, they dropped me when the dog attacked them.
Oh, they picked you up?
Yeah, yes.
Like two guys picked you up by the arm?
Four guys.
They carried you by the arms and legs?
Yes.
How old were you, do you remember?
Oh, I was maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old.
And they dropped you?
Like a sack of potatoes.
And then what, they ran away or they came back?
They ran away because they were afraid of the dog.
And you were happy?
Of course. But I had to go anyway. My parents made me go.
I got it. Okay. So so that's what you would be learning in, and then that was so way before school started. And you did that up until what age?
Oh, up until Bar Mitzvah.
So you basically, and what did you learn there? You learned...
I learned everything. I learned the five books of Moses. I even learned how to read the Torah, Haftorah, everything.
Did they teach you the meaning of it, or did they just...
Oh, yes. I learned Gemara. I don't know if you know what that means.
Yeah, it's the commentary.
Yes. It is a Gemara in different kinds, Bubba Metzia, Bubba Mekama, the names of those Gemaras. And one, as a matter of fact, in one of the Gemaras, I think it was Bubba Metzia, they taught about the divorce, why a woman would be divorced.
Why would they allow a divorce?
Why a woman would have to be divorced.
Oh, and what would be grounds for divorce?
The grounds for divorce. It said when a woman was, cheating on her husband, adultery.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know what this was all about. I didn't understand the whole thing. I said, what is adultery? And the rabbi says, don't ask such questions.
Just remember that it's adultery.
Yeah.
So they were teaching you stuff that you really shouldn't even be learning at that point, pretty much.
That's right. I was much too young for that.
Uh-huh. That's so funny. But you figured it out at some point.
Later on, I knew, of course.
Uh-huh. And do you remember any of the other stories or laws that they were discussing?
Yes, laws about property You know, if they dispute over property, disputes over all kinds of disputes. But it's so far back that I really do not remember the details.
You telling me that you can't remember 85 years ago?
No, I can't. Some of the things. The details I don't remember.
I know. I don't blame you. That's quite amazing that you remember what you do remember. And so you went. So when did you start the Hebrew language part of this training?
I was at that point already like 12 years old.
Oh, so it overlapped for a little while?
Oh yes, it overlapped. So I was going to three schools at the same time.
Uh huh.
The Bible lessons, the public school, and the Hebrew lessons.
And how did you feel about that?
The Hebrew lessons I liked because it was a language.
Oh, you liked learning the language?
Yes.
But you still don't speak it. How long did you go for?
It was a long time. I do understand the words that I learned, some of them.
Right.
If you don't use it for such a long time, you just don't.
Listen, I went to Hebrew school for 6 years and I never learned how to speak it. And then in college, yeah. I took Hebrew lessons too, because I wanted to speak conversationally, and I couldn't pick it up at that point either. It's a difficult language.
Right.
In comparison to English, and I'm sure in comparison to Polish as well.
I remember Polish and Polish and Hebrew, both of them, are very difficult grammars. Then by comparison to the English language grammar, it's very, very difficult.
When you started to speak as a baby, your first language was Yiddish then, yes?
Right, exactly.
So you had to learn Polish when you started school?
No, I learned Polish outside. We had a neighbor, Polish, and everybody else spoke Polish. My father's business, and I was over there, I spent a lot of times. I had friends who spoke Polish. And I spoke Polish on the outside.
I was thinking about some of the things that you said before about the mix that you were living in a town that was mixed Jews and non-Jews, military families, Polish families. That was kind of uncommon for the towns in Poland. Weren't most of the people separated and living in most of the Jews living in Jewish towns?
But they were not separated. This was all done voluntarily. The Jews like to live by themselves.
I understand. But most Jews lived in Jewish towns, shtetls or smaller towns. The larger towns where there were Jews living in, like Lodz and the larger towns that you were talking about?
Yeah, in the larger towns, they had sections where the Jews lived separately. But in the smaller towns, like in my town, they were not separately at all. I mean, yes, there were areas. Yes, there were areas that more Jews lived than Polish families, but they were still mixed. It was still mixed.
Right. You went to the same school, so you obviously lived
same school. Right.
But in most towns, so the towns where your mother's family lived.
Yes, they were mostly Jewish, yes.
And so your upbringing, so my question was, do you think that had something to do with the fact that your father became less religious than his father, than a lot of the Jews in the other villages? Or was that a common thing that was going on even in the Jewish villages?
That's right. That's right. That was the reason why we had a number of people in our town who were not, they were religious, but they were not dressed like the Hasidim.
I understand, but when was everyone dressed like Hasidim? Was there a time when everyone was dressed in black?
No.
So there were,
those people who were dressed like Hasidim were always dressed like Hasidim, and the others dressed like we did.
So there were like always, there were always sects or groups of ultra-religious Jews.
Oh, yes.
Just like today. But so when you would go back in time to the late 1800s, where your grandparents and your parents were from, the time of Fiddler on the Roof, which a lot of people know about, that was common. They were the common people. They weren't ultra-religious. They didn't dress in black. But they were religious because they followed all the Jewish laws.
Exactly.
So that's why in Fiddler on the Roof, the story is about intermarriage, which was taking place at that time.
Intermarriage was so
frowned upon,
so out of place. So I cannot. If an intermarriage happened, they denied that they had a child. The parents,
right, and that's
denied,
what the movie. That's what the movie was about.
They have a child as if this child would have been dead. The same thing,
right?
That's how the parents felt.
But Tevye came around and accepted it. And things on the Roof, and things started to change around that time.
Yeah, this was a time in Russia at the time of the revolution. In fact, the boy that was married his daughter was a communist. He was talking about a revolution and a new world.
Uh-huh. And you were involved in that too, were you not?
In what?
Communism?
In a way, only reason I was involved is because things were so bad for the Jews. We only had two options. One option was to be a Zionist and believe that Israel will become an independent country someday, which was a dreamlike, almost an impossible dream. It wasn't like airplanes flew in 11 hours to Israel. It was an impossible dream. Very, very few people could even afford the trip. And also we had politically it was impossible because the British had policies against immigration, Jewish immigration to Palestine. And the easiest possible option was communism. Communism did not discriminate against Jews. Communism did not believe in the religion in the first place. So everybody who was a communist was even a Catholic or a Jew.
Uh-huh.
The two of them do not believe in any religion, so there was no problem. Okay? This is basically the way it was.
How were you introduced?
So Russia, who was communistic, which is Poland was bordering Russia. We could not go there, but we were hoping that a lot of people who were Jewish and communists, as well as other Polish people were communists also, but not the Jews, the younger Jewish generation, a lot of them were communists and a lot of them were Zionists. So I remember looking for the...
Stay close to the microphone, please.
I was looking for the easiest possible way out. While I felt that Zionism is the real answer, I also felt if we cannot get Zionism, if we cannot get Israel, because it was an impossible dream, so the next possible possibility would be Russia, communism, you know? So it was like a man drowning. If you would hand him a sword, a sharp sword, he would grab on that. The next possibility, that's what's equal to that.
I see. It wasn't your first choice.
Was not.
So how were you introduced to it? Who brought
we were fully aware of all this. The both organizations were very strong. We had the communist organization was very strong, and the Zionist organization were split in a lot of different organizations, with Shomer HaTzair, and there were others. There were three or four different Zionist organizations.
Say the first one, the name you just said?
Shomer HaTzair.
Shomer. What is it? Do you know what that means?
Shomer is what do you say best in English? Someone, a security man,
guard? Guards?
Guard, yes, a guard, that's it.
Guards of Hashemir?
Shomer HaTzair.
HaTzair?
I don't know what HaTzair means.
All right, we could look that up. So in other words, and the people who were organizing these groups were living in your town or they came from other towns?
No, they were, we all lived in this in the town. Yes, there were some speakers coming from different from towns, different towns to speak. As a matter of fact, like Jabotinsky, the leader of the Beitar, the movement that I belong to, or what's his name?
Trumpeldor.
Trumpeldor was my hero.
Right.
But I'm talking about he became the president. He became the
first president of Israel.
In Israel, the
prime minister.
Prime minister. What's his name? He was the leader.
Oh, the name Rabin?
Not Rabin. No.
The guy who's still alive. What's his name? The
no,
president?
No, he died. He was a prime minister.
Oh, Moshe Dayan? No.
No. It'll come to me and I say, and I, you know, it's just.
Jabotinsky was one of the first presidents of Israel, was he not?
No. Jabotinsky died here in the United States in 1940. Jabotinsky was not in Israel after Israel became an independent country. He unfortunately did not make it.
Okay, so is there anything else about the communism that I should be asking you? I feel that there's a lot more there that I really don't know anything about.
Well, the Jewish youngsters who were communists, they were well organized.
So what did they do? What were their meetings about?
Huh?
What did they meet about? What did they discuss?
Discuss how to make a revolution and turn the country into communism. This was their aim.
The Poland.
Of course. As a matter of fact, the Communist Party was illegal in Poland. And my uncle, my father's brother, he was a stepbrother. He was a communist, and they were, most of them, on May 1st, or the night before, they usually threw these red flags, communist flags, onto the telephone wires, and you could see them. This was illegal, and a lot of them went to jail.
So
and they were in that jail that I went to. When I was accused by the Germans of doing sabotage, which is another story.
Yeah, we'll get to that story. So yeah. who is your brother's your father's stepbrother?
He is Rachmiel.
Rachmiel?
Right.
And how is he a stepbrother?
My father's mother died young, and my grandfather remarried. And he was born to the second wife, my grandfather's second wife.
I see. And did you participate in these meetings, these communist meetings?
Some of them. They trusted me.
How old were you?
Oh, 15.
Oh, so it didn't 14. Start. It didn't start until you were a little older.
Well, no, of course. When you were young, you couldn't be trusted.
Oh, I see.
This was illegal. They had illegal meetings. They were illegal.
So how did you end up hearing about it or getting into the first one?
From friends. Friends. All friends.
Who were the same age as you?
Exactly.
Were they Polish or Jewish friends?
Jewish.
Uh-huh. So they brought you to the first meeting?
Right.
And you were one of the youngest there?
Right.
And how did they become to trust you?
Well, they talked to me first. They know. They size you up. They know how to judge a person. What? They get to know you.
What did they ask you? Do you remember?
Of course. Huh?
What did they ask you?
Who remembers that? They know you. I mean, we knew each other very, very well.
Did you do anything for them? Did you do anything to help them? Did you do any errands for them?
No. There was nothing to do.
You just went to the meetings.
Right.
Is there anything you're not telling me about this?
No, there's nothing that I'm not telling you.
Okay. I'm just checking because
unless it doesn't come to my mind.
No, I understand. No, I understand. I just don't I want to make sure you're not holding anything back.
No, I'm not.
To protect me.
No, no.
Or to protect something.
No, I'm not protecting anything.
Were there any things that you did for fun when you were a kid growing up?
Oh, no, definitely.
What were some of the things? Did you play games out in the street? Did you?
We played soccer.
That's right.
We played ping pong. We danced.
What kind of dance? How did you dance?
All kinds, especially when I belonged to the Beitar. We danced hora and stuff like that. We sang. We played billiard.
What?
What is called billiard? Pool. I'm sorry.
Billiards.
I said billiard.
Yeah.
Pool.
Played pool. Where was this? In that same Stiebel?
No, in different places. We played games very similar to baseball. Or we used broomsticks instead of
bats.
Bats.
What kind of ball did you use?
Like a tennis ball, something similar to that.
Did the broomsticks have the broom attached to it?
No.
And do you remember how the game worked or what it was called?
Very similar. I don't remember, but it was very similar. Very similar, and the rules and all were very similar to baseball.
And the dancing and all these games, was it mixed, boys and girls?
Oh, yeah.
There was no separation of boys and girls. What about in school?
Also no separation.
What about in the Jewish school?
Also not, no.
Did you, so when you were in Cheder, the girls?
Cheder, no. There were no Jews on it. No girls in Cheder.
Oh, because they didn't study that. They didn't study that.
No, they did not. They did not study like the boys.
Right. And so, what other games? Ping pong. You got good at ping pong. When did you start playing soccer?
Also, at a very early age, maybe 9, 10.
Did you play in the street, or was there a soccer field?
No. We had a field. It was not a soccer field. We made it into a field.
What?
Into a soccer field.
So this was just an open area?
Yes, an open field. I don't even know who it belonged to, but it was open and big enough. So we played soccer on that field.
And did you have goals set up?
Absolutely, yes. Well, not really goals like here with the nets and all. We had two stones, one and and we knew this is our what do you call it?
The goal.
The goal.
And
right.
You had to get it in between the two stones.
Exactly.
Brilliant. I want to talk about these paintings that were stolen.
Okay.
Do you know about this?
I know about it, but.
It turns out that there's like a couple of $1 billion worth of artwork here.
Right. I know about that.
I'm going to... All right. So
I only know what you know. I read about it.
Isn't that amazing? What this guy, he was hoarding these paintings in his apartment?
Greg, we don't know. There are a lot of paintings missing. There are a lot of Germans who have paintings that we don't know till today. And you know what else? I'm going to surprise you. There may be some Americans who were GIs at that time in Germany could have some of these things also.
His father was an art dealer.
Art dealer, right.
But they're saying that for some reason they're not going to be, they may not be given back to their rightful owners.
If they would know who the rightful owners are, they have to be, their law is to give them back to the rightful owners.
How can you prove that?
How we can prove that? They have, the owners themselves can prove it because they can, their way is how to prove it, yes. There are some of the dealers are still alive. If somebody has a piece of art, like a valuable Picasso or a Rembrandt, it is known at all times, from the minute, all times, who the owner is of that piece, going back who knows how long.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
yeah,
it is known
because they were famous, valuable works of art at that time. So there was records.
They're always valuable, exactly.
Uh-huh.
So if somebody buys a painting like this, if you want to know who has a certain Picasso, you can find out in no time.
So Hitler basically had the Nazis round up all of this art and put it in storage. I thought he destroyed a lot of it.
No, he did not, apparently not destroy it, but he did not. There's a certain art that Hitler did not think that it was, classified for Hitler's ideals to have such paintings, you know.
So he didn't want anyone.
He called them illegal. He called some paintings illegal. He didn't want the public to see, the German public to see that.
Matisse, Picasso, Chagall.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he is the one. His father was in the art business, and they knew what to do. I mean, the average person who does no art was not after art. These people knew what they were doing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So this is how it comes about. There are many more paintings missing. Jewish paintings, Russian, from the Russian museums. That they occupied, they took everything. Everything. I mean, there's a lot of paintings still missing, and they are in the hands of some individuals.
Okay, that's the end of hour number 3. We'll be back with hour number 4 next.